Chapter 56. The Last Chapter. People of the Dragon. Throughout the city of Tyr, people woke with the dawn, speaking of the dreams they had had. Dreams of the dragon battling Balzamon in the heart of the stone. And when their eyes rose to the great fortress of the stone, they beheld a banner waving from its greatest height. Across a field of white flowed a sinuous form like a great serpent, scaled in scarlet and gold, but with a golden lion's mane and four legs, each tipped with five golden claws. Men came, stunned and frightened from the stone, to speak in hushed tones of what had happened in the night, and men and women thronged the streets, weeping as they shouted the fulfillment of prophecy. "The dragon!" they shouted. "Althor! The dragon! Althor!" Peering through an arrow slit high on the side of the stone, Matt shook his head as he listened to the chorus rising out of the city in waves. Well, maybe he is. He was still having a hard enough time coming to grips with Rand really being there. Everyone in the stone seemed to agree with the people below, or if they did not, they were not letting on. He had seen Rand just once since the night before, striding along a hall with Kalendor in his hand, surrounded by a dozen veiled Aiel and trailing a cloud of Tyrans, a knot of defenders of the stone, and most of the few surviving High Lords. The High Lords, at least, seemed to think Rand would need them to help him rule the world. The Aiel kept everyone back with sharp looks, though, and spears if need be. They surely believed Rand was the dragon, though they called him He Who Comes with the Dawn. There were nearly 200 Aiel in the stone. They had lost a third of their numbers in the fight, but they had killed or captured 10 times as many defenders. As he turned from the arrow slit, his eyes brushed across Ruark. There was a tall stand at one end of the room, carved and polished upright wheels of some pale, dark-stripped wood, with shelves slung between them so all of the shelves would stay flat as the wheels were revolved. Each shelf held a large book bound in gold, covers set with sparkling gems. The Aiel had one of the books open and was reading. Some sort of essays, Matt thought. Who would have thought an Aiel would read books? Who'd have thought Nael could bloody read? Ruark glanced in his direction, all cold blue eyes and level stare. Matt looked away hastily before the Aiel could read his thoughts on his face. At least he is not veiled, thank the light. Burn me that Avienda nearly took my head off when I asked her if she could do any dances without spears. Bane and Chiad presented another problem. They were certainly pretty and more than friendly, but he could not manage to talk to the one without the other. The male Aiel seemed to think his efforts to get one of them alone were funny, and for that matter, so did Bane and Chiad. Women are odd, but Aiel women make odd seem normal. The great table in the middle of the room, ornately carved and gilded on edges and thick legs, had been meant for gatherings of the High Lords. Moraine sat in one of the throne-like chairs, with the crescent banner of Tyr worked into its towering back in gilt and polished carnelian and pearl shell. Egwene, Nynaeve, and Elaine sat close by her. "I still cannot believe Perrin is here in Tyr," Nynaeve was saying. "Are you sure he is all right?" Matt shook his head. He would have expected Perrin to have been up in the stone last night. The blacksmith had always been braver than anyone with good sense. "He was well when I left him," Moraine's voice was serene. "Whether he still is, I do not know. His companion is in some considerable danger, and he may have put himself into it also."
"His companion?" Egwene said sharply.
"What? Who is Perrin's companion? What sort of danger?" Nynaeve demanded.
"Nothing that need concern you," the Aes Sedai said calmly. "I will go and see to her as I may shortly. I have delayed only to show you this, which I found among the Tirangreal and other things of the power the High Lords collected over the years." She took something from her pouch and laid it on the table before her. It was a disc the size of a man's hand, seemingly made of 2 teardrops fitted together, one black as pitch, the other white as snow. Matt seemed to remember seeing others like it. Ancient, like this one, but broken where this was whole. 3 of them, he had seen, not all together, but all in pieces. But that could not be. He remembered that they were made of Quendia, unbreakable by any power, even the One Power.
"One of the 7 seals Luztheran Kinslayer and the 100 companions put on the Dark One's prison when they resealed it," Elaine said.
nodding as if confirming her own memory.
More precisely, Maureen told her, a focus point for one of the seals. But in essence, you are correct. During the breaking of the world, they were scattered and hidden for safety. Since the Trolloc Wars, they have been lost in truth. She sniffed.
I begin to sound like Varen.
Egwene shook her head. I suppose I should have expected to find that here. Twice before Rand faced Balzaman, and both times at least one of the seals was present.
And this time unbroken, Nynaeve said. For the first time, the seal is unbroken. As if that mattered now.
You think it does not? Moraine's voice was dangerous in its quiet, and the other women frowned at her.
Matt rolled his eyes. They kept talking about unimportant things. He did not much like standing not 20 feet from that disk now that he knew what it was, no matter the value of Quendiar, but...
Your pardon, he said.
They all turned to stare at him as if he were interrupting something important.
Burn me. Break them out of a prison cell, save their lives 6 times between them before the night is done, and they glower as hard as the bloody Aes Sedai. Well, they did not thank me then either, did they? You'd have thought I was sticking my nose in where it wasn't wanted then, too, instead of keeping some bloody defender from putting a sword through one of them.
Aloud, he said mildly.
You do not mind if I ask a question, do you? You have all been talking this, Aes Sedai, business, and no one has bothered to tell me anything.
Matt,
Nynaeve said warningly, tugging her braid, but Moraine said, in a calm only just touched with impatience,
what is it that you wish to know? I want to know how all of this can be.
He meant to keep his tone soft, but despite himself, he picked up intensity as he went along.
The Stone of Tyr has fallen. The prophecy said that would never happen till the people of the dragon came. Does that mean we are the people of the dragon? You, me, Lan, and a few hundred bloody Aiel?
He had seen the water during the night. There not seemed to be much edge between Lan and the Aiel as to who was the more deadly. As Ruark straightened to stare at him, he hastily added,
Sorry, Ruark. Slip of the tongue.
Perhaps, Moraine said slowly. I came to stop Belal from killing Rand. I did not expect to see the Stone of Tyr fall. Perhaps we are. Prophecies are fulfilled as they are meant to be, not as we think they should be.
Belal. Matt shivered. He had heard that name last night, and he did not like it any more in daylight. If he had known one of the Forsaken was loose and inside the stone, he would never have gone near the place. He glanced at Egwene and Nynaeve and Elaine.
Well, I'd have come in like a bloody mouse anyway, not thumping people left and right.
Sandor had gone scurrying out of the stone at daybreak, to take the news to Mother Gwenna, he claimed, but Matt thought it was just to escape those stares from the three women, who looked as if they had not yet quite decided what to do about him. Ruark cleared his throat.
When a man wishes to become a clan chief, he must go to Rhydion, in the lands of the Genaeil, the clan that is not.
He spoke slowly and frowned often at the red-fringed silk carpet under his soft boots, a man trying to explain what he did not want to explain at all.
Women who wish to become wise ones also make this journey. But their marking, if they are marked, is kept secret among themselves. The men who are chosen at Rhydion, those who survive, return marked on the left arm, so.
He pushed back the sleeves of his coat and shirt together to reveal his left forearm, the skin much paler than that of his hands and face. Etched into the skin, as if part of it, wrapped twice around, marched the same gold and scarlet form as rippled on the banner above the stone. The Aiel let his sleeve fall with a sigh.
It is a name not spoken except among the clan chiefs and the wise ones. We are...
He cleared his throat again, unable to say it here.
The Aiel are the people of the dragon,
Moraine spoke quietly, but she sounded as close to startlement as Matt could remember ever hearing her.
That I did not know.
Then it really is all done, Matt said, just as the prophecy said. We can all go on our way with no more worries.
The Armelin won't need me to blow that bloody horn now.
How can you say that? Egwene demanded. Don't you understand the Forsaken are loose? Not to mention the Black Aja, Nynaeve added grimly.
We took only Amiko and Joya here. 11 escaped. And I would like to know how. And the light alone knows how many others there are we do not know.
Yes, Egwene said in a tone just as hard. I may not be up to facing one of the Forsaken, but I mean to take pieces out of Leandrin's hide.
Of course, Matt said smoothly. Of course.
Are they crazy?
They want to chase after the Black Aja and the Forsaken?
I only meant the hardest part is done. The stone has fallen to the people of the dragon, Rand has Kalendor, and Shaitan is dead.
Moraine's stare was so hard that he thought the stone shook for a moment.
Be quiet, you fool,
the Aes Sedai said in a voice like a knife. Do you want to call his attention to you, naming the Dark One?
But he's dead, Matt protested. Rand killed him. I saw the body.
And a fine stink that was, too. I never thought anything could rot that fast.
You saw the body, Moraine said with a twist to her mouth. A man's body. Not the Dark One, Matt.
He looked at Egwene and the other two women. They appeared as confused as he. Roark looked to be thinking of a battle he had thought was won and now learned had not even been fought.
Then who was it? Matt demanded.
Moraine, my memory has holes big enough for a wagon and team, but I remember Balsamon being in my dreams. I remember. Burn me, I do not see how I can ever forget. And I recognized what was left of that face.
You recognized Balsamon, Moraine said. Or rather, the man who called himself Balsamon.
The Dark One yet lives, imprisoned at Sheol Ghul, and the shadow yet lies across the pattern.
The light illumine and protect us, Elaine muttered in a faint voice. I thought the Forsaken were the worst we had to worry about now.
Are you sure, Moraine? Nynaeve said. Rand was certain, is certain, that he killed the Dark One.
You seem to be saying Balsamon was not the Dark One at all.
I don't understand.
How can you be so sure?
And if he was not the Dark One, who was he?
I can be sure for the simplest of reasons, Nynaeve. However fast decay took it, that was a man's body. Can you believe that if the Dark One were killed, he would leave a human body? The man Rand killed was a man. Perhaps he was the first of the Forsaken freed, or perhaps he was never entirely bound. We may never know which.
I may know who he was.
Egwene paused with an uncertain frown.
At least, I may have a clue. Varen showed me a page from an old book that mentioned Balsamon and Ishamael together. It was almost high chant and very nearly incomprehensible, but I remember something about a name hidden behind a name. Maybe Balsamon was Ishamael.
Perhaps, Moraine said. Perhaps it was Ishamael. But if it was, at least 9 of the 13 still live. Lanfear and Samael and Ravhin and...
Pah!
Even knowing that some of those 9 are at least free is not the most important thing.
She laid a hand atop the black and white disc on the table.
3 of the seals are broken. Only 4 still hold. Only those 4 seals stand between the Dark One and the world. And it may be that even with those whole, he can touch the world after a fashion. Whatever battle we won here, battle or skirmish, it is far from the last.
Matt watched their faces firm, Egwene's and Nynaeve's and Elaine's, slowly, reluctantly, but determinedly too, and shook his head.
Bloody women! They're all ready to go on with this. Go on chasing the Black Aja, trying to fight the Forsaken and the bloody Dark One. Well, they needn't think I'm going to come pull them out of the soup pot again. They just needn't think it, that's all.
One of the tall, paired doors pushed open while he was trying to think of something to say, and a tall young woman of regal bearing entered the room, wearing a coronet with a golden hawk in flight above her brows. Her black hair swept to pale shoulders, and her dress of the finest red silk left those shoulders bare, along with a considerable expanse of what Matt noted as an admirable bosom. For a moment she studied Ruark interestedly with large, dark eyes. Then she turned them on the women at the table, coolly imperious. Matt she appeared to ignore completely.
I am not used to being given messages to carry,
she announced, flourishing a folded parchment in one slim hand.
"And who are you, child?" Moraine asked.
The young woman drew herself up even more, which Matt would have thought was impossible.
"I am Berylaine, first of Mayenne."
She tossed the parchment down on the table in front of Moraine with a haughty gesture and turned back to the door.
"A moment, child," Moraine said, unfolding the parchment. "Who gave this to you? And why do you bring it if you are so unused to carrying messages?" "I do not know."
Berylaine stood facing the door. She sounded puzzled.
"She was impressive."
She gave herself a shake and seemed to recover her opinion of herself. For a moment she studied Ruark with a small smile.
"You are the leader of these Aielmen. Your fighting disturbed my sleep. Perhaps I will ask you to dine with me one day quite soon."
She looked over her shoulder at Moraine.
"I am told the Dragon Reborn has taken the stone. Inform the Lord Dragon that the first of Mayenne will dine with him tonight."
And she marched out of the room. Matt could think of no other way to describe that stately one-woman procession.
"I would like to have her in the tower as novice."
Egwene and Elaine said it almost like echoes, then shared a tight smile.
"Listen to this," Moraine said. "Luz Theron was mine, he is mine, and he will be mine forever. I give him into your charge to keep for me until I come. It is signed Lanfear."
The Aes Sedai turned that cool gaze on Matt.
"And you thought it was done. You are Tavirin, Matt, a thread more crucial to the pattern than most, and the sounder of the Horn of Elir. Nothing is done for you yet."
They were all looking at him, Nynaeve sadly, Egwene as though she had never seen him before, Elaine as if she expected him to change into someone else. Ruark had a certain respect in his eyes, though Matt would just as soon have done without it, all things considered.
"Well, of course,"
he told them.
"Burn me. I understand. I wonder how soon Tom will be fit to travel. Time to run. Maybe Perrin will come with us. You can count on me."
From outside, the cries still rose unceasing. "The dragon, Althor, the dragon, Althor, the dragon, Althor, the dragon." And it was written that no hand but his should wield the sword held in the stone, but he did draw it out like fire in his hand, and his glory did burn the world. Thus did it begin. Thus do we sing his rebirth. Thus do we sing the beginning. From Doan Toldarate, Songs of the Last Age, Quarto 9, The Legend of the Dragon. Composed by Boann, Songmistress at Tarallon, the Fourth Age. The end of the third book of The Wheel of Time.